All rise. Oy, 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 all persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, draw a line, give your attention, for this court is now in session. God save the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning, I'm Judge Castle, to my right is Judge Lance.
If I swear, I have Invisalign on my teeth, sometimes it happens, so forgive me. Not an advertisement, but they still work. Anyway, to my left is Judge Davis, and we're here today in the matter of Michael Jones, docket number 073060. Would counsel for the parties please note your appearance for the record?
Matthew Schmidt for the appellant, Michael Jones. To my left is Kathy Lieberman and Sean Rick.
Your name again is?
Matthew Schmidt.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Justin Zimmer. I represent the Secretary. And with me today is Joan Moriarty.
Thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present argument. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve a portion of the time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 10 minutes.
10 minutes you have. You may proceed.
Judge Castle, and may it please the court. Today we're here to discuss whether the Secretary has fulfilled his statutory obligations under Section 5103 AD, where VA obtains what turns out to be non-probative medical evidence. Specifically, where VA obtains medical examination reports.
So you're backing off of the characterization as non-evidence?
Only in nomenclature, Your Honor, following the Supreme Court's directions in Fagan.
That would be the Federal Circuit.
Yes, Your Honor. That being said, Your Honor, what we're hoping this court will, how this court will conclude today, is that when VA obtains medical examination reports in which the examiner ultimately declines to provide an opinion as to whether it is at least as likely as not that a veteran's disabilities are related to service, VA has only obtained non-probative evidence and as such has necessarily unfulfilled its statutory duty to assist. As we have argued in our initial brief, The Secretary has necessary...
Well, Counselor, let me interrupt you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Let's get to the heart of this.
Certainly.
So your contention is that we persistently and consistently remand until we get a doctor to say something, right?
Perhaps, Your Honor. I would say...
And you have a physician who, within his or her realm of professional responsibility, just says, I cannot say that this is service-connected, right? An honest opinion. And you want to remand and remand and remand until he or she says something that suits the appellant's litigation strategy.
Until that or something else happens. Until one of two things happens. Until VA has obtained a probative medical opinion that provides a conclusion, or until the board makes a finding, as it has every right to under Section 5103 AD, or under Section 5103A generally, that providing further assistance, that there would be no reasonable possibility that providing further assistance would assist in substantiating the claim. Of course, the board has not so found here. So what we're asking, Your Honor, is that there be a rule that one of two things has to happen. Probative evidence has to be obtained, or if there's no reasonable possibility that such probative evidence can be obtained, that the board make the necessary finding for that, that the board make the appropriate and necessary finding supported as with any finding with adequate reasons or bases.
Let me suggest a third alternative, which is the veteran now has this opinion from VA, medical opinion, that says within good conscience and within the parameters of my malpractice insurance or conscience or whatever, I cannot say that this is a service-connected disability.
Certainly are.
And now the vet can take that piece of paper and go to his or her private physicians and say, can you do better than this for me?
I would have two different responses to that,
okay.
Judge Lance. One would be that it doesn't require just an examination. In other words, the qualitative requirements of 5103 AD are not met just by providing an examination report. Indeed, your characterization isn't of these examinations is not controversial at all. I believe these medical examiners acted in good faith and just concluded that they themselves couldn't provide an opinion. That is, of course, I would say tangential to the question of whether the qualitative requirements of 5103AD have met. It requires more than just an examination. The examination has to have a particular quality. The second response I would have to that, Your Honor, is that, of course, you're right. Since what you're alluding to is that a veteran has a duty to present his case. VA tried to provide an examination, but there's still not a probative etiology opinion of record. Surely the veteran could take this opinion and go to his doctor. Were it that easy, however, Judge Lance, Section 5103AD wouldn't exist. Were it so simple for a veteran to just go to any physician and try to do what VA hasn't done, which is to obtain probative medical opinion on etiology, if it were that simple, then two things would happen. One, the veteran would probably not be applying for disability compensation from VA. And secondly, Congress wouldn't have recognized the financial necessity of requiring VA to obtain these opinions. To put it simply, Your Honor, these opinions aren't cheap, and these veterans are not particularly wealthy.
Well, surely they're not cheap, and the taxpayer, of course, is paying for all of these opinions. And so, therefore, remands clog up the system, consume valuable and limited resources, and so forth and so on. It just seems to me that if in this particular instance your client had a deep and abiding belief that the physician at the VA was wrong professionally, he can go find a doc out on the street and get an opinion that says this is service-connected. Okay, then you've shifted the burden, have you not? And VA now, or the board now, has to make a determination as to the credibility issues and a variety of other things.
Your Honor, I don't know that I'd characterize it like that. I don't think that there's a burden shift occurring with our argument. Indeed, I'm not even arguing that this physician was wrong. I'm not trying to make a controversial statement. Indeed, I'm relying on what is seemingly uncontroversial in that the appellant, the appellee, and the board have all found these opinions aren't probative. The only thing I'm saying, not that this examination was wrong, that where VA attempts to obtain an examination, and the only result of that is non-probative evidence, one of two things has to happen. Because the threshold of 5103AD is still met, they have to either provide another examination, or if they don't want to burden the public fisc with a further examination, they have to make the only finding that would preclude VA's duty under 5103AD, which is a finding that such assistance there's no reasonable possibility that providing an examination would result in probative evidence. That's the only thing that we're asking for, Judge Lance.
So that's a definition of reasonable efforts under 5103A.
Your Honor, the definition is one of reasonableness, and so it requires a fact finder to decide in any particular fact pattern what is and what is not reasonable. And like with any other, and as with any other finding, that finding would be the responsibility and purview within the purview of the board. Responsibility precluded their having an obligation to provide an examination. They said they fulfilled the duty to assist because they had provided an examination. What we're arguing is that the inquiry has to go one step further, looking at the quality of the examinations, not whether there just was an examination.
But isn't that arguing that the determination by the board that the duty to assist had been fulfilled is wrong, not that they didn't make that determination?
Yes, Your Honor.
On Davies, did you look at Davies?
Yes, Your Honor, I did.
Isn't this similar? I assume your argument is that this is similar to Davies, that in that case, without an autopsy, you couldn't pursue, and that could be read in two different ways, as stated in that particular case, and that here, with regard to the left ear on the 231 record, the fact that there was insufficient information could be read in two ways, insufficient, they could get more, or insufficient, there's no more to get.
To be honest, Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that question because I don't know what information was missing from the examination report. The left ear hearing examination you're alluding to just said there's insufficient information. So if I may be permitted to use a buzzword, it would require speculation on my part to know what information the examiner needed.
Right. So it could be read in at least two ways, maybe even more ways, as to what exactly was needed. I want to throw out a follow-up on Judge Lance's question, and you seem to indicate you'd like a decision that says in every single instance when an examiner says, I cannot render an opinion, it would be speculative, that this court should somehow remand that. I think it'd go contrary to our case law that already exists. If a doctor says that, I've taken all the tests I can take, there are no more to be taken, and as a result of this, there are several possibilities, and it'd be speculative to pick which one. Are you suggesting that an opinion like that would have to be remanded?
I'm suggesting, Your Honor, that it should be remanded if one of two things didn't happen. That was not the rationale upon which a negative opinion was based, or the board didn't make the reasonable possibility finding I alluded to earlier. In fact, if the doctor...
How would it be reasonable to consistently send back and a second doctor says, you know, I've examined all this, all the tests have been taken, and he's right, there are a lot of possibilities. And a third doctor says, I've examined all this, all the tests have been taken, there are all these possibilities. Well, why would you want some kind of standard that says a doctor who gives an opinion that the tests have been rendered, there's nothing here I can think of else that can be done, but it would be speculative to render an opinion. Why would you take such an extreme position?
Three things to that. One, I respectfully disagree with the characterization that our position is extreme. And the other two things I would say is this. The reason I take this position is because we believe that Section 5103AD puts qualitative requirements on examinations obtained for two.
Where? Specifically, point to the language in the statute.
Under the sub-threshold requirements of Section 5103AD.
Read them.
Certainly, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'm reading the sub-threshold requirement for an examination under Section 5103AD. This is found under subsection 2, yes. The sub-threshold requirements are the following. My apologies. That the evidence of record contain competent evidence of a current disability or persistent or recurrent symptoms of a disability. Second, that it there indicates there's a possibility that the disability or symptoms may be associated with the claimant's active military service, but, and this is the sub-threshold criteria that, I'm sorry, the threshold criterion of import here, does not contain sufficient medical evidence for the secretary to make a decision on the claim. This is what
paragraph C, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Schmitten, are you suggesting that the examiner's statement on the left ear hearing disability indicates that there is not sufficient information?
Yes, that's the rationale provided by the examiner.
And what about on the January 2007 examination for erectile dysfunction?
My apologies. In that examination, Your Honor, the examiner provided a medical historical account of the veteran's diabetes and the onset of his ED, but didn't provide a link as to why none of that. Under why with those facts there couldn't be an opinion. So I would say it's nearly as opaque as the first.
Well, let's assume for a moment that these physicians actually did some medical research and they've examined all of the literature in the field and they come back with these statements. Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting that should be remanded as well?
No, Your Honor. Imagine in that scenario the case was before the board. What you just provided, Judge Davis, is a fairly accurate, a fairly adequate set of reasons or basis for why the board could properly find that there is no reasonable possibility that providing another exam would yield any more probative value than the first one, and nothing in our argument precludes that finding.
But if an examiner reviews the medical information in the field thoroughly and comes back and says, I still believe this is speculative for me to offer or try to resolve the issue, doesn't that meet 5103's requirements?
No, Your Honor, it does not.
Because?
Because the evidence of record is still insufficient to allow the secretary to make a decision on the claim, on the merits. As all parties in this case have agreed, and as the board can see in this decision and the secretary in their brief, these opinions do not have probative value. If the medical evidence, Judge Davis, is insufficient before these examinations are provided, And on etiology, these questions do not have probative value. And that means that in the equation of the evidentiary value of the record hasn't changed.
Where in the statute is a requirement that the opinions have probative value?
I would say two things, Your Honor. It's
in the statute, in the language.
The word probative value does not exist.
Thank you. Okay. Go ahead.
I would say that describing medical evidence in a record as sufficient or insufficient, there's an implicit understanding that medical evidence is probative. Indeed, if I could say, they're synonyms. If a medical evidence is probative, one would say that it is sufficient. There's a medical question and a probative medical opinion has been provided. There's a question that needs to be answered, and a probative evidence needs to answer that question. That's what I would see as the most natural reading of a sufficient or insufficient medical evidence of record, Judge Davis.
So regardless of whether or not this doctor or any other doctor examining this question looked at the material in the area and would still come back and say, there's no way to connect, you know, the disability with the injury in service, or I can't offer an opinion that would not be speculative, where are you left?
I would say that the record is no better off than it was before in terms of the sufficiency of the medical evidence of record. To the extent to which providing another opinion would lead, would have a reasonable possibility of getting additional probative value, that would be a finding obviously properly left to the board.
So your position would be then that if a medical opinion came in that was speculative, that could not render an opinion because it would be speculative. Fully supported, did all the tests, et cetera, that the board would then have to make a determination that based on the information and evidence provided by the doctor, et cetera, and the tests that were provided, we believe there's no reasonable possibility that an additional opinion would render different results, that would be the finding you're asking for.
Yes.
And you agree, however, that finding is part, or that duty is part of the duty to assist.
That is a part of two different sets of criteria that the board can use in applying to determine if its duty to assist has been met. That's not the criteria the board applied here, Your Honor. The board found that the duty to assist had been met because an examination had been provided, not that providing another examination, there would be no reasonable possibility that examination would have probative value. And those are qualitatively different criteria. One is whether or not another examination is necessary, and the other is, has the examination already been provided? So it's not...
So if we reject the overbroad approach that you're trying to take to this, focusing on these two medical opinions here, or three, I guess, two related to the left ear, as I understand it, your position is that the ones regarding the left ear, one which said there's insufficient information, the previous one that said given the available information, left open a question that the board never answered as to whether or not that information might be available, and it's very similar to Davies. Therefore, it's insufficient.
If I understand your question correctly, you would be describing the first examination as providing an open-ended question, but the second examination not.
I think both of them, I'm trying to understand your argument.
Sure.
And the first one says, given the available info, mm-hmm. that might be even more open-ended, but even the second one says, insufficient info, same doctor.
Right.
You're left with the question, I assume, could some more information help me render a decision?
Sure, Your Honor.
And that's where these medical opinions are insufficient, in your opinion.
I would say they're insufficient for a separate but not entirely different reason. I would say they're insufficient because they lack probative value. The issue that you...
I understand. I said if we reject
sure.
your overall
oh, I understand.
Position.
The issue that you bring up isn't unreasonable at all. If these were accepted... You know, wholesale, then obviously a veteran is put in a situation where he doesn't know what evidence an examiner may need. So, in that respect, it's sort of VA's general duty to know.
Moving on to the ED one,
certainly.
As I understand your discussion, I think it was Judge Davis,
yes.
That one just simply left out the rationale, an understandable rationale as to why it would be speculative to render an opinion.
That was my reading of the opinion, yes, Your Honor.
So, counsel, would you. Are you suggesting that perhaps the court might be better served if we were to adopt a list of requirements for the examiner to meet, something like whether or not there's further information that may be obtained at the time of the report, if that would allow a more definitive opinion, or whether the inability to render a nexus opinion because of the examiner's inability to identify the etiology of the condition for which that service connection is sought, whether the medical literature has been adequately explored to determine whether current research indicates a possible connection, or whether the examiner understands the distinction between medical certainty and the legal standard of at least as likely as not. I assume that your position is, had those questions been answered by the examiner, we would be in a better position to determine whether or not there's any kind of probative weight that should be associated with those reports.
Yes, I agree with that assumption, Judge Davis.
Okay.
You had three other issues.
Yes, we didn't make any arguments, Your Honor, with regard to cholesteatoma and perforated tympanic membrane.
No, you did make an argument with regard to Stigall, statement of the case not provided.
Yes, Your Honor, the Secretary conceded that error in his brief. So there is no, as I understand, there's no controversy on this issue before
the court. Still has to be shown to be wrong.
Well, Your Honor, I think the...
Was the issue raised below?
I regret, Your Honor, that I don't know.
What's the prejudice associated with that?
Well, without providing a statement of the case, there isn't an opportunity for, which is the entire point of the statement of the case, the veteran doesn't have an opportunity in between the VA, the RO adjudication stage, and the board adjudication stage to know essentially the state of his claim and what he can do in the interim to essentially get a different result.
Can I add 2 minutes to your time? Are there any other questions on that one?
I have another question, but not on that.
On the third issue you had, that the right ear was inextricably intertwined with the left ear to the point that if the disability for the left ear were remanded, that matter were remanded, that the right ear would also have to be remanded.
That's correct.
And I understand that's because the ratings under 4.85. Got it.
Yes, sir.
And the last one was your reasons and basis overall. Just a general question since I had 2 minutes there. As I understand your argument, you're saying that the board erred in analyzing and assigning probative value to the medical records. Is that a reasons and basis error, or is that just the board is wrong?
Yeah, I would say that is properly described as a reasons or basis error, because if that is part of the reasoning in the board's, in sort of the antecedent to the board's conclusion, then whether or not the conclusion is proper becomes difficult for the court to determine. But the frustrating judicial review is the phrase used in this court's case law. So because it's an antecedent to its conclusion that the duty to assist has been met, I would say it is perhaps
going back to what you would see as a requirement for the board to dot an I, cross a T by specifically stating that it would be no reasonable foreseeable, whatever the term was,
no
reasonable possibility of additional assistance.
One could describe it as crossing I's, or dotting I's and crossing T's. I would describe it respectfully, Your Honor, as making...
Well, there's certainly a lot of subsets to the duty to assist. I mean, we could go down a whole list of probably 100 things you could come up with.
Sure, and if the evidence suggests that one of the criteria has been met and the board doesn't discuss it, then a remand from this court might be appropriate.
Counsel, why doesn't Roberts control the resolution of this case? I mean, accepting that perhaps the opinion in Roberts, as you argued in your motion, which I granted for panel purposes,
thank you,
was that it's over a dictum, not a holding in Roberts. The passage that says something roughly like, just because a medical examination concludes that it would be speculative does not mean that the duty to assist isn't met, or something along those lines. Why couldn't we use that as persuasive as I did in the single judge opinion and follow it?
Certainly, Your Honor. As with any piece of obiter dicta, a court could find that a dicta is or is not persuasive. So to the extent that the court finds that the Roberts question is or is not dicta, then obviously I would imagine you would apply it in your opinion accordingly. Of course, you're organizing a panel now, so to the extent that you want to affirm or reject the Roberts dicta, if it is necessary, then obviously you're well within your rights to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. If you need any additional moment or two, we can give that to you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Why isn't the appellant correct? Why shouldn't the board make a finding that this opinion is speculative and maybe we should go get another one, but we don't have to here because there's no reasonable possibility of additional assistance?
Why, Your Honor?
Yeah. Why isn't he right?
Well, in this instance, Your Honor, the board determined that the duty assist had been met, and the board specifically looked at the opinions at issue and went through those opinions and determined that the opinions were adequate. Is that different from what your question is?
Well, let's go to the adequacy of the opinion then. How are these opinions adequate? I mean, do you know if additional information could be provided to that doctor who opined with regard to the left ear at 231, whether or not he'd be able to render an opinion as to the likelihood or non-likelihood? Or are you left with a question as to whether or not additional information could be obtained?
Your Honor, in this situation, it's the Secretary's position that there's no additional information out there. And what the examiner was...
And where do you get that from, the board findings?
From the board's discussion, Your Honor?
The board's findings on the record. Does the board find anywhere, or can you point to anywhere in the record where the board makes a conclusion that no additional information provided to that doctor could help him render a decision?
No, Your Honor, that's simply not in the record.
Then how is this different than the autopsy case, the Davies case?
Well, in that situation in Davies, Your Honor, I believe that the doctor specifically said, I cannot render an opinion without an autopsy. So he was referring to specific evidence, Your Honor. In this situation, the examiner simply said, I cannot render an opinion as to etiology without resorting to speculation.
Well, he said specifically there's insufficient information.
It's the Secretary's position. He did, Your Honor. It's the Secretary's position that statement, what he means is there's insufficient information in the record before him.
And on what do you base that, though? Just this is the Secretary's view. We don't have the board's view. We don't have the doctor's view. But this is the Secretary's view, and we've got somebody over here who thinks it's the other way.
You're right, Your Honor. There could have been more discussion in the opinion, but it's the Secretary's position that does not render the opinion inadequate.
But does it render the statement of the board inadequate?
The statement.
In other words, I think what I'm hearing an appellant say is, okay, Doc comes up with this opinion. It's the opinion.
Right.
But the board looked at that opinion, and we're sitting here today having a dispute, and I don't think we can tell from the board decision as to why the opinion, another opinion might not be adequate, or additional information might not be adequate. The doctor says there's insufficient information for me to opine. He doesn't say, you know, we've got all the information available, and based on that, it would be speculative because it could be one of five different reasons. It's not much longer a statement. It's not like a reasons and basis analysis, but as I understand STEFL, there are certain requirements that a doctor should give to beyond a conclusory opinion.
Sure, Your Honor, and the Secretary believes that those elements are met here. In this case, with regard to the hearing exam, the examiner discussed the service medical records, the post-service evidence, actually did audiometric testing of the appellant, considered his statements, and came to an opinion that he couldn't render. Came to the conclusion.
And the reason he couldn't render it?
Sorry, the reason?
Yeah.
Insufficient information, Your Honor.
Okay. So if he had some additional information, could he render it?
Not in this case, Your Honor. The Secretary believes not in this case, no.
Okay.
Why do you believe that? Why does the Secretary believe that? What is that based on?
Based on the record, Your Honor. It's based on the fact that appellant entered into service with normal hearing. He complained of hearing pain in his right ear and shortly after coming into service. However, audiometric tests at that time determined that his hearing was normal. We also have a separation exam that again notes that his hearing is normal. His hearing loss in the left ear did not even come about till 2001, which is nearly, as you note, Your Honor, in your decision, nearly 34 years after service.
So it sounds like the Secretary can take a position that it's not likely that it's service-connected. But this doctor couldn't even render that.
That's correct, Your Honor. Sometimes
we don't know why.
Well, sometimes medical examiners simply are not willing to risk their name and make a decisive decision. However, you know, we can look at his exam is pretty clear on what he evaluated. I think that
but didn't you just
Isn't that like, gee, I was unlucky. I got the doctor who wasn't willing to risk his reputation versus I have the doctor over here who can weigh the evidence as the secretary himself can weigh the evidence?
Well, one could certainly look at that, Your Honor. I guess on the flip side is this appellant has been given two VA medical exams, both by the same doctor.
But both of them by the same doctor. In the first one, he says, given the available info, doesn't that ring bells in your head? Doesn't that, gee, is there some other available info? I mean,
Your Honor, it could be seen as ambiguous. Again, the secretary has to fall back on the fact that the record is what it is, and the examiner.
So if this was your son, and he were wounded or came back from out of service, and he had an opinion that said, given the available info, or there's insufficient info, would you not ask the second question?
What is the insufficient?
Is there some info we could get that could help?
If it was my son, Your Honor, I would pay for him to go get his own private medical opinion.
And Uncle Sam, I think, said that we, you know, the VA will pay for a doctor. Well, let's not go down this road here.
Well, Your Honor, just under 38 U.S.C. 5107A, it's the Secretary's position that the appellant or the veteran has to put forth some evidence. In this case, all we have is appellant's lay assertions of a medical nexus. He's never come forward with any medical opinion from any doctor saying that there's a connection here.
The board made a determination, apparently, that they couldn't render a decision without the medical evidence. So they went and got medical evidence. The medical evidence, we're sitting here having a discussion over whether or not additional information might help this doctor, and nobody knows the answer to it. Seems like an obvious question.
But the secretary says, your position is that, based on the record, the secretary believes that this opinion was adequate. Couldn't the physician have just as well reviewed the information in the claims file to reach that same conclusion? And did the physician do that in this case?
Yes, he did, Your Honor. He reviewed the claims file and appellant's medical records, at least with regard to the hearing loss. The examiner did not review the C file with regard to the ED claim, Your Honor. However, he did review, what he noted was medical records. That's unclear what he actually reviewed.
But still concluded there's insufficient information to resolve the etiology.
Correct. Your Honor, I'd like to have a brief discussion, if I may, regarding the appellant's position, reliance on Perman. In his brief, his opening brief, appellant relies exclusively on Perman for the proposition that...
Well, they backed away from that earlier. Let's talk about Roberts.
Okay, Your Honor.
Why doesn't Roberts control?
Why does it not control?
Mm-hmm. According to the appellant, it doesn't control.
Well, Your Honor, the appellant argues that the court and the secretary has relied impermissibly on obiter dicta. It's the secretary's position that is not dicta in Roberts. While it is not the first holding, it's the secretary's position that it is a holding of the court.
Really?
I'm sorry?
Really? That's the secretary's position regarding Roberts? In the last paragraph in Roberts, it says the court holds. It doesn't precede that. That language doesn't precede the paragraph where the paragraph at issue exists, does it?
It does not, Your Honor. You're absolutely correct. However, the analysis, in that case, in Roberts, Your Honor, the veteran specifically argued that there was a Stigall violation because he was provided an inadequate examination. The exam did not answer the questions at issue. And I think it was important for the court in Roberts to address that specific allegation. So you're correct, Your Honor. Holding does not precede the discussion at issue here. However, it's the Secretary's position that it was nonetheless a holding of the case. It's not the primary holding, but it is a holding. As a fallback argument, Your Honor, this Roberts has been cited in my research 17 times since 2000 for this exact proposition, both by you, Judge Castle, and Judge Lance, specifically in the last year. This case may give us an opportunity, if the court were to decide that it is dicta, it certainly gives you an opportunity now to reassert that premise in a panel decision, Your Honor.
Very astute of you, counsel. My records indicate that five separate members of the court have cited Roberts for that proposition.
Correct, Your Honor.
Good research.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, if I may discuss Fagan. the Secretary's position that Fagan is directly on point with this case, and that I guess in two respects. One issue I caught when an appellant's argument today is discussion of probative evidence, whether or not an exam is exam was not probative in this case, the question of whether it's probative. And I think it's important, the distinction, at least in the Secretary's mind, that you know this issue of not evidence, what's probative, what's not probative. When you look to Fagan, Fagan made, the important distinction between an examiner's statement that I cannot render an opinion as to etiology without resorting to speculation, and the remainder of the opinion itself. And the Secretary's position that kind of that adds weight to our position that the exams in this case were adequate, just because the mere fact that the statement that the examiner could not render opinion as etiology stands apart from the actual analysis and discussion in the exams themselves. The
doesn't Fagan really just stand for the proposition that the exams are evidence? Not necessarily that they're adequate. They're evidence. They're evidence. They're to be weighed. They're not probative of the issue of service connection.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And if they are evidence, then doesn't all this boil down to a matter of the weight that would be placed on the evidence, the examination reports in this instance?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Well, I'll move on. Mr. Gall, you conceded on behalf of the Secretary that a statement of the case was not provided. What's the prejudice? Do you agree with counsel, opposing counsel?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. That was our position in the brief. And
in your brief on inextricably intertwined, you gave what I thought was an unusual argument. Because there's no service connection yet for the left ear, which, of course, is an issue here as to whether we remand and service connection is granted, it's not inextricably intertwined. It kind of like avoids the issue. And the argument they were making was, if it's remanded because of the left ear, you should remand the right ear. I'm not sure of the Secretary's position. There's no service connection. It's not inextricably intertwined. Fine, I agree. But if we were to remand for the left ear, do you agree that the right ear should go back because it could possibly be impacted by a service connection and a rating that might impact the rating on the other ear under 4.85.
So, Your Honor, just to be clear, are you asking whether or not a remand for an additional exam as to the right ear, if the court were to rule?
No. If we were to rule as to the left ear, for the board to either give another exam or explain why one's not needed,
right,
whatever.
Right.
Would not we also have to remand for the right ear because the disability ratings for ears can be dependent on each other if both are service connected and both give disability ratings under 4.85. That was their position, and you didn't answer it. I'm just trying to see.
Your Honor, may I consult my second chair? Your Honor, with all due candor to the court, I did not actually write the brief in this case. Therefore, Your Honor,
we suggest to counsel who comes before court that if you didn't write the brief, you should either talk to the person, find out what they're doing, and be able to explain it.
I have a response, Your Honor.
We'll move on.
A response.
Thank you very much. Do you have anything else?
I have nothing further, Your Honor, other than to request that the court again affirm the board's decision on appeal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Got it. Thank you very much. You have 10 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I wish to point out that I agree with the Secretary that Fagan is directly applicable to this case, however, for a different reason with different implications. While the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit didn't adopt this court's nomenclature as applied in Permanent Davies with regard to evidence versus non-evidence, the Federal Circuit still made clear that it was adopting the court's treatment, if not the nomenclature of evidence, where an examiner doesn't provide an opinion. As the Federal Circuit stated rather explicitly, they describe this evidence as not pertinent evidence, one way or another, not positive, not negative, and think that just not pertinent evidence, one way or another, with regard to service connection. So That's what the appellant would see as the necessary implication of Fagan. Other than that, I would like to return to a question you asked me earlier, Judge Castle. You gave me an example wherein a physician goes and gets test after test, provides lengthy analysis, several diagnoses, and ultimately says he can't come to a conclusion. In that case, Your Honor, medical examiner could provide a medical opinion. An examiner with that rationale could very well conclude, based on the data I have, it is not, at least as likely as not, that the veteran's disability is related to service. The only point I'm trying to make is that we're not asking for...
I suppose if there's two possibilities, he could say, I can't tell between the two. And if there's three, he could say it'd be speculation to pick between them.
He could, Your Honor, I suppose.
And then you have the issue, if it's two of them, do you get equipoise? Or does the board discuss that and maybe you do or don't? I mean, there's a lot of issues that can grow out of all that.
I would say, though, Your Honor, that if there are four possibilities and there's no way to determine which one it is, the examiner could himself say, because I can't tell, it is not at least as likely as not. There's no affirmative evidence. In fact, that would be the proper sort of amalgamation of 5107A and B and 5103AD. There is no 5103 affirmative evidence that 5107B, it is at least as likely as not in the examiner's opinion. That being said, I'm cognizant, and this comes before the court, a lot of the difficulties in the legal implications of a medical person's finding. A doctor is not a lawyer, and a lawyer is not a doctor. As to Roberts, Judge Davis, I would like to address one other reason why, even if persuasive, Roberts would not be helpful for us in this case. Much of our argument is dependent on how this court will determine Section 5103AD. And as I mentioned in my opening argument, what the implications are of the threshold requirements for an examination under that section. Again, as I argued, the language sufficient evidence necessitates the obtainment of probative evidence. This section didn't exist when Roberts was decided. Roberts was decided in the mid-90s, if I understand correctly, I think it was 1997. The VCAA wasn't passed until 2000, so Roberts necessarily couldn't have provided guidance as to what the language in Section 5103AD would tell us today.
Counselor, that was 99.
99. Thank you, Judge Lance.
But let me ask you this. I mean, aren't we just here arguing about the English language? The physician says, based upon the evidence available, based upon the evidence presented, based upon the evidence that I have before me, I can't make a decision. Okay. Doesn't that invite the appellant to say, but I have more, or I have something different? I have other things that you want to think of, and I don't see any evidence of that in this record.
I would agree, Your Honor. A lay claimant before, especially a lay claimant before a VA, should have an opportunity to know what evidence he could provide.
You're not a lay claimant. You tell me. Is there more out there?
There may be, Your Honor. We don't know. We don't know what we could obtain.
Well, there we go. I mean, are we going to rely on a VA doctor to run out there and ask everyone in the universe, is there more evidence in this case?
There may be, Your Honor.
Or isn't that the appellant's responsibility in terms of this concept of a two-way street under BCAA to say, well, I forgot to include, or I have another doctor's statement, or something of that nature. Something a little more wieldy than appealing cases to this court on this issue.
Your Honor, you're absolutely correct that there's a two-way street in developing evidence of record. However, to mix metaphors, part of the direction of that street has already been paved by Congress, where what's missing is an etiology opinion. It is firmly VA's duty, not the claimant's, to provide that etiology opinion. To the extent that an etiology can't be obtained because there's evidence missing that a claimant could provide, then surely the claimant should and could be given an opportunity to provide that evidence. Maybe in this case, Mr. Jones could provide a more clear statement as to when exactly the onset of his hearing loss occurred. These things that come up in medical examination interviews, but obviously interview transcripts and medical examination reports are not typically a part of the record. With that being said, Your Honor, unless there are any further questions, I don't have anything else to add.
I have another one.
Yes, Your Honor.
What should the doctor have said here that would have taken away the question mark regarding whether or not there is additional information to obtain?
If the doctor had said something to the extent of, because the onset of the hearing loss started here, for instance, perhaps if Mike Jones, I don't know that this is the case, I'm making a hypothetical. If a claimant had said, my hearing loss started 3 years after service, and other than that, the evidence of record is in the same state as it is in this case, the medical examiner could say, because the evidence shows that it started on this date, and this doesn't require an examiner sort of, to use, again, the buzzword, speculates to what other evidence is out there, he could say, you know, acoustic trauma doesn't cause delayed onset hearing loss, and then provide a definitive opinion. As to providing a speculative opinion, perhaps the doctor could say something to the extent of providing more data on the whisper test or the whisper test that Mr. Jones got out of service. Perhaps if he indicated that was absolutely definitive, absent some other sort of evidence. But even then, I would suspect that he could provide a negative opinion with such a rationale. That would be my answer to that, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. The case will be submitted. We'll come to greet the bar.
All right. This honorable court is adjourned until further order.